Nice.
ॐ सहनावगतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So how many of you have read this book before? Has anyone read this book before?
Not me.
I've done two chapters, Guruji.
You've done two chapters.
Yeah, I was doing with somebody.
So you were studying this book with somebody here in Delhi?
It's an online thing, Guruji.
Huh?
With somebody, a young boy, a nephew of mine, actually in Calcutta. He's been to the Vedanta Institute and he's into this. So he was informally just doing a class for some relatives of his.
So your nephew, what is his name?
Kothari, I'm forgetting his first name.
Okay.
He's based in Calcutta. I'm forgetting his first name, sorry.
Okay. Okay. No problem. Okay. See, first of all, last week's introduction, were you there, Sandhya ji?
Yes, I was, Guruji.
Yeah, and who is this on the iPhone?
I don't know if that's me. I don't know if my name is showing up, Anu.
Anu, your name is showing up. There's someone else whose name is
Okay.
Arjun.
I don't know, someone else is there on iPhone, so I just want to know who it was. Who is this? Anyway, see, this book, Vedanta Treatise, like I said, is a gist of about 30, 40 books, you can say, which includes Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, Brahma Sutra, and a lot of Prakriya, like Vajra Govindam, Atmabodha, Tattva Bodha. All these, Swamiji has read all these books, and then he's written the gist of all these books in a systematic way. From the known to the unknown. Because there's a lot of terms that is being used in Vedantic circles that even the people who use nor the people who listen, none of them know what it is. They just get used to those words without really understanding what it is. Therefore, Swamiji first introduces this book in a simple way. First he says, the introduction part of Vedanta Treatise, he explains. Like what really you're looking for is that happiness. And then you say life, it is you meeting the world. So you must understand about you should understand about the world. What is the world made up of? What is the individual made up of? And what are the different types of individuals, etc., etc. He beautifully presents in the first part. Then once you get to understand the basics, then you need to understand about yourself properly. So you can say the real Vedanta starts from part B. Where, he talks about the human composition. What are you composed of? And out of this, who you are, doing self-analysis and then understanding that the composite personality goes through three states of consciousness, but you are that supreme self which is beyond. To be able to attain that, you need to remove this ignorance with knowledge. For that, you need to have a certain type of mind. That jnana yogyata is important. And then with that renunciation, which is jnana yogyata, qualification for gaining the knowledge of the self, you should have some amount of vairagya with reference to the world. Then you will be interested in knowing more and more about the Atma, the self, then you'll put in the efforts, and then you can realize the self through the practice of karma, bhakti, jnana. So all this he beautifully explains. And then finally, the deeper aspects of Vedanta, which is The world is nothing but illusion. But you cannot disregard this illusion because you are now caught up in this illusion. So while you are living in this illusion, within the illusion, everything is governed by law of causation. So you need to understand how the law works, abide by the law and enjoy your life. At the same time, gain the knowledge and get out of this illusion. And that he beautifully presents in part C, which is the real Vedanta. You know, the essential Vedanta is given there in part C. What is this book all about? So, now in this part A, or the first part, the first chapter is called as Role of Veda. Why should I study Veda? What will it do to me? Will it do something to my material well-being? Will it contribute for my physical well-being? Will it contribute for my emotional well-being? Will it also help me in my intellectual well-being? And also will it take me to spiritual evolution? Then I can spend some time studying Veda. Otherwise, it's a total waste of time. You know, just knowing a little bit more about what our culture and great sages have said in the past, how is it going to transform my life? Therefore, here he kind of talks about what everybody is actually looking for in life. See, everyone throughout the world, they want only happiness or peace. And they want that peace along with productivity. You want to achieve material well-being and mental peace. So what is happening is, one set of people, they are very productive, materialistically well-off. But by their own admission, they've lost the peace of mind. Now, for example, technologically, today's world is very much advanced. So, you know, what individually a person used to work and produce, now the machineries do that. So, the productivity has increased tremendously. But if you see the quality of life of people, seem to have deteriorated. Why is it? That is what he discusses here. That is because you haven't understood about yourself and you haven't understood the world properly and how to relate with it. So, Vedanta teaches the technique of relating with the world and also it helps us in reaching the real self within so that we can achieve that ultimate freedom. Therefore, Vedanta plays a very, very vital role in our life. So first topic in this portion, role of Vedanta. The topic is science and Vedanta. So Shweta, if you have a book, can you read it?
The chapter 1?
Chapter 1, yeah, science and Vedanta. Topic.
Chapter 1, role of Vedanta. Science and Vedanta. Vedanta literally means culmination of knowledge. Veda means knowledge, Anta means end, the knowledge of your real self. The self within is supreme, presently obscured by your body, mind and intellect. You are aware of the body, mind and intellect, but not of your real self. Vedanta helps you unfold yourself, discover the true nature of your inherent being. Your real being is divine, the abode of absolute peace and bliss.
Yeah. So, in this first paragraph, all that Swamiji is doing is just introducing Vedanta. What is Vedanta? Veda means knowledge, Anta means culmination, end. End of knowledge or culmination of knowledge. Now, when you say, before coming to this definition that Swamiji has given, general definition which is there, another definition which we have discussed before, I would like to discuss about that before going on to this, what he says. See, Veda means knowledge and we have four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sama, Atharva. And each Vedas have four parts called Brahmana, Mantra, Aranyaka and Upanishad. Mantra, Brahmana, Aranyaka put together is called Veda Purva Bhag, beginning portion of the Vedas. And the Ant Bhag of Vedas, end Bhag of Vedas, contain the philosophy of life and living called Upanishads. So Upanishads were given in the end. So therefore Upanishads were called as Veda Ant, the end of Vedas. But there is this pun on this word, Vedana. What is it? This meaning that Swamiji gives is also there. Culmination of knowledge, where there remains nothing else remains to be known. Having known something, if there remains nothing else to be known, that is called the culmination of knowledge. Now, when you look at this definition and proceed with the knowledge we gain in the world, any amount of knowledge in any field, how much ever you get, can you say you have known everything? You know, there is a story which actually is supposed to have happened between Akbar and Birbal. Akbar drew a line on a board and told Birbal, can you make it short without touching it? All that Birbal did was, he took a chalk piece and drew another line bigger than this line, and that line became short. So, in world also, how much ever you know, what you don't know still is very, very big. What you know is very relative. So, in the world, in the external knowledge, the external knowing, there is no end. Yet, Vedanta means culmination of knowledge. Why do we say that? See, in every knowledge, there is knower knowing the known. The knower is the subject. The known is the object, the world. And knowing the knowledge, the process, the third one. So now, the knowledge never ends, because in the world, an individual, how much ever, tries to know, in spite of knowing so much, still remains ignorant in many areas. So you cannot achieve the culmination of knowledge externally. But when you start questioning the subject, who am I? So when you do that, then you begin to understand. Today you are calling yourself as this physical personality. The physical personality is what you think you are. So Vedanta says, no, you are not the physical personality. Beyond the physical personality, there is emotional personality. Beyond that, there is intellect. Beyond that, there is the subject. So you are aware of your perceptions and actions. So then you are different from your perceptions and actions. You are aware of your body. You are aware of the pain in the body, if there is pain anywhere. So you are different from that body. Similarly, the agitations of the mind, the joys of the mind you are aware of. So you are someone different from the mind. Similarly, you are clear about the knowledge that you possess in your intellect, or the ignorance, what you know, what you don't know. So there, again, you are different from that. So therefore, Vedanta says, you are aware of your body, aware of your mind, aware of your intellect. You know not yourself, which is beyond the body, mind, and intellect. But once you have known about the self, thereafter there is nothing beyond it to know from the subjective angle. For example, you say that Asia, this India, that India, this Delhi, that Delhi, this classroom, that classroom, this table, that table, this chair, sorry, that chair, this body, this mind, that mind, this intellect, That intellect, this vasanas. That vasanas, this atma. Uske baad there is no that atma. So you arrive at the culmination. And this knower, the subject atma, is behind every knowing. It is a substratum in every knowledge. Without that subject, the knowing is not possible. That atma enlivening the faculties. So that knower, beyond which nothing remains, is the knowing principle in every knowing. That knowing principle behind every knowing anywhere by anyone across the universe at any given point in time is the ultimate that is to be known, beyond which there is nothing remains to be known. So therefore he says that is the culmination of knowledge. Thereafter nothing remains to be known. And this is knowing, or knowing this knowledge is not actual knowing, it is a discovery. He puts the word discover there. Very carefully he used the term discover. If I am that knowing principle, the subject, then why am I not knowing that today it is covered by your physical layers, emotional layers, intellectual layers? This is the problem. It's obscured by the body, mind and intellect.
I have a question, Guruji.
Yeah.
When you're saying the knower is the subject, the known is the object. But there is, and the knower is the subject or the atma, but that is complete. So what is there beyond? I mean, the known is also, the object is also atma.
That is what I'm saying. Once you know the atma, which is what is the knowing principle behind everything, then there nothing remains to be known. Therefore, then the culmination of knowledge.
Then the knower and the known is the same. It's the same.
Exactly. Once you know that, there nothing remains to be known.
Okay.
Therefore, it's called culmination of knowledge. You got it? Otherwise, this doubt comes. Where can knowledge culminate? Knowledge never culminates. How much ever you know, you still need to know. So the moment you gain the knowledge of the Atma, thereafter nothing remains to be known. And this gaining of the knowledge doesn't mean you need to push the knowledge from outside into your head. It is discovering. You are already that Atma. Today it is covered, obscured by the body, mind, intellect, because you've constantly identified with the body. You have so much identified with this body, you will, you know, it's so difficult for you to be separated from that. I am this body. I am this sex. I am a male or a female. I am this caste. I am this educational background. I am this name. We are so conditioned. So this conditioning is obscuring the truth.
So Atma discovering its true self is...
Atma discovering the true self. Shweta has discovered the true self. Atma. Atma is not...
Atma already knows. Atma is
all-knowing. It is never...
Shweta discovering Atma as in self-realizing the self or the Atma is no action. Is it? Okay. Understood. Thank you, Guruji.
Therefore, it is discover. The discover karna. So now, whenever we talk about discovering, we need to understand about how the covering actually happens. Covering happens by constant reiterating. Constant identification and reiteration. I've been constantly identifying with this body and reiterating it. I've become this body now. Similarly, the mind, similarly the intellect. So when I study about it and then I slowly reflect, then I stop my identification with this body and intellect. That's the way I can really get out of my covering. When I remove all that, then the Atma within reveals itself. And then you understand that your real being your real nature is divine. And not only you, everyone's real nature is divine. That's why from the Vedantic angle, to address anyone as a papi means you are committing sin. When you are addressing somebody as a papi, it's obviously because you are identifying with their body and intellect, and therefore you are saying so. But you ought not to do that. Doing that is a mistake. It's wrong. You are supposed to identify with everyone as the Atma. This is the true self. So therefore, he says, your real being is divine. The abode of absolute peace and bliss. So once you understand that you are that Atma, which is Paripurna, there is nothing lacking. Since there is nothing lacking, no thoughts running outside, and since there are no thoughts running outside into the world, no desires, nothing, you remain Paripurna, complete, peaceful, blissful. But when you do not know that, you consider yourself to be this body, then you look at yourself as a very limited individual. Then there are other beings, other things in this world. Instantly insecurity comes whether you will have any damage because of this otherness outside. Then to protect yourself from that, you will start running after the world to amass wealth and this and that, and in the process you lose your peace and bliss. So, therefore he says, the real peace and bliss you will get when you reach the abode. Abode meaning the Atma, the self. You discover through the knowledge, then you attain peace and bliss. And with that peace, you will be extremely dynamic and yet calm, composed, serene, which is what you are supposed to achieve. What is this question? Why was Sitaji punished then? I don't understand what is the connection. Who has asked that question? This is Amiti. Yedi is Amiti, right? Why was Sitaji punished then? Why did Krishna ask Arjuna to fight the evil? There is no evil then. My understanding is right, confused as if there is no papi. See, I told you, papi, when you say you are actually identifying with reference to the body, with reference to their mind. That is why Jesus Christ said, hate the sin and not the sinner. Because no one is a sinner. A person is committing the sin because he or she doesn't know the truth about oneself. And not knowing the truth about oneself, they are identifying with a limited personality. The moment I identify with a limited personality, I'll do all kinds of nonsense. So whoever it is, whether it's Arjuna, whoever, whatever they did, or Duryodhana, it's all because they identified with the gross body, mind and intellect and thought they were that gross body, mind and intellect. And therefore they committed sin. So you are also doing the same sin when you identify with people, body, mind, intellect and treat them as if they are nothing but flesh and bone. When you are empowered with this knowledge, you will not look at anyone as just a bundle of flesh and bone. You understand that it is actually the Atma in different form. Then there is no way you will address anybody as papi. That's all I said. I am not saying in the world people don't commit sin. I never said that. I said don't address anybody as papi. If you are doing so, then you are identifying with the body, mind, and intellect. Therefore, you are addressing them as papi. When Jesus Christ said, Father, forgive them, they know not what they are doing. Obviously, they are such a great personality like Jesus Christ, who is forgiving even those fellows who are crucifying him. And such a person, these fellows are crucifying. What level of ignorance they must be in? And why they are committing such a sin? Because they are in such deep ignorance. A benefactor like Jesus is being crucified by them. Why are they doing this? Out of sheer ignorance. So if you are also going to address somebody as papi, that means you are also in ignorance. That's what I am saying. Is that okay, Amiji? Are you there or not? It would be helpful if you say yes or no. As you are doing through this video, I don't know. Oh, she says her voice is not working. Yeah. What is this? But still I feel so. Lord Ram did it. What did Lord Ram do? What did he do? At the external level you have to set it right. Now for example, forget Lord Ram, Sita and all that. Now I am talking on Vedanta, I am saying you should not address anybody as papi. But in my own body, if virus comes in, am I supposed to leave it and say, okay, virus, please take over my body? I will try to live as much as possible so that no virus, nothing comes. But in spite of it, if virus comes and it doesn't go, I have to take antibiotics. I have to take the medicine. So what, I am against these viruses or what? It's at this level we need to do what has to be done. At the level of the body, mind, intellect, what you need to do. So you being a Kshatriya, or you being a ruler of a kingdom, whether it is your wife or son or daughter, you should have the same standards. You cannot be seen to be showing different standards. That's all. So that's a different thing. So doesn't mean that we don't take actions, straight away destroy all the jails. Straight away destroy all the laws, nobody should be punished. As it is, when even when the law is there in India, everybody is driving in all different directions. It's a tremendous chaos on the roads of Delhi. Now, should we just call off the laws and say, yaar, no law, nothing. Jaisa karna, jo bhi karna kar lo. And people will be walking on top of each other. That is not what I am saying. What I am trying to say is, once you gain this knowledge, you understand that they are not papi, they are doing this path because they are identifying with the, they are being ignorant and identifying with the body, mind, intellect. And since they think they are limited, they are doing all this. So I have to try and see without punitive action if I can correct them. If that is not working out, then what to do? In both Ramayana and Mahabharata, they were given umpteen options to stop. But they were not listening. Then what is to do? But still, you will not address anybody as papi if you have got the knowledge. That's all I am saying. You will understand that they are doing this kind of nonsense because, you know, it is out of ignorance. And since you brought up that he punished Sita, he never punished Sita. He punished himself also, that way to say, he punished Sita. See, I don't know whether I explained this long time ago when this conversation came. In Kamba Ramayana, you know, where Ramayana has so many versions. In Tamil Nadu, we have this beautiful culture of all the great learned people, both men and women, who are professors and PhDs in literature. There is this festival every year happens. Even now it happens. It happens in different parts of country, different parts of the world also. Like they may come and do it in this Tamil Sangam in Delhi also. Across the globe they do it. They go and do it in America. A lot of Tamilians participate in that. It's a beautiful culture. What these professors and research scholars on this literature, they do is they have different topics and they debate. I have not read Kamba Ramayana, so vast literature, I haven't read it, let me admit that. But whenever I get an opportunity, I used to listen to those debates. And when the festival happens, they have so many debates in a particular day by different scholars. Sometimes it starts at 10 o'clock and goes on till 6 o'clock, and if you leave the seat, you won't get your seat back. So without even eating food, I have sat and listened to all these people. So intriguing. So much deep knowledge you can learn from these great people. So, there was this particular portion about Mother Sita being banished by Lord Ram. And he tells Lakshmana to go and leave her in the jungle and come back. Lakshmana is so angry. He is so angry at Lord Ram. He doesn't know what to do. He has to follow the orders of his brother and the king. So he goes and leaves her and comes. When he comes back, Lord Rama is sitting in the palace and crying. Crying means he's emotionally, low that time. And Lakshmana says, what rubbish is this? You were the one who wanted to banish her. Now you are sitting and weeping. He's questioning. And the debate went on like that. And beautifully, one professor says, Sidayai Kaatukku Anippiyathu Raja Raman. In Tamil, what it means is, the one who banished Sita to the jungle was Raja Rama. The one who is now sitting and crying is Sita Rama. See, all of us do play different roles. So, especially when you play the role of a king, you should be above your relatives, your family, your friends, your personal superstitions and this and that. You cannot be seen as if you are favoring XYZ. You can't. So therefore, when there is a general perception, like even in today's context, whether these ministers do or not, I don't know. That is separate. But when there is a general perception that you are, blamed for something or the other, corruption or whatever it may be, if that's the general perception, ideally, you're supposed to resign. Because if you say, no, I will get the inquiry committee going, and even if the inquiry committee comes out saying you are clean, people will say, yeah, this fellow is still in the ministry. He will be influencing the inquiry committee. So this inquiry and all that is bakwas. Therefore, the person is supposed to resign. Just because he resigns doesn't mean he's admitting that he's done the crime. He might not have, but has to resign, get out, and then let the inquiry happen independently, and then it's proven that nothing wrong is done, then he can decide to come back or not. That's the standard a lot of people follow. Even now some people may follow. I'm not saying everybody does that. But that's the standard Rama did. That's the standard Sita followed. She also understood that. And when her role is ended, she ended her life. She's a very independent thinker. See, the characters of Sita and Draupadi was portrayed so brilliantly in the Ramayana and Mahabharata. It's unfortunately misunderstood by them. They are not weak emotional people. If Sita wanted, she could have finished off Ravana without Rama's help. She doesn't do that. Like for example, when you go with your guru, like for example, when I go to ashram, supposing let's say I take you all with me to the ashram, my guru only speaks, I will not speak there. I may know the answer even if he is questioning you and you are not able to give the answer. I am not going to give the answer. I will wait. It's a conversation between guru and Shishya. I am not going to interfere there. In that context, you keep quiet. So, these are different things communicated from different angles. And being a king, you need to rise above your post. So, it's not like Lord Ram punished the Sita. Sita got punished passively, nothing like it. Not to be understood that way at all. They're trying to communicate something very, very deep. Moment you have come to be the king, when you have these kind of challenges. And even in our own country, when great people were there in the past, like Lal Bahadur Shastri and so many other great people, they resigned. I'm told there was a train accident. He resigned. What he will do? No doubt, he is a minister maybe. Therefore, in that way he is responsible for that. So he took the responsibility and resigned. How many people do that? That's the thing that is being communicated then. Nothing more than that. So, It's not that Rama believed that perception. It's nonsense. See, when we look at any scripture or any text, we should look at it only. When his wife, first of all, when he was asked to go to the jungle for 14 years, he only wanted to go alone. He did not want Lakshmana or Sita to come. They insisted they'll go. He had no choice. He said, nothing, don't come. She said, nothing doing, I'm coming. She's a very independent thinker, Mother Sita. And that independence was given to her by Rama. Rama said, here, this deer is not real, it is fake. She didn't listen. She's a very independent person. Her independence was given. See the way they are discussing these things so many centuries ago. This actually story happened or not. It is assumed it happened. See the thinking. Even today's world, women have to fight for their freedom and independence. Forget India, country like America. They are struggling to get one woman candidate as their president. Elected. It's still even today. But in our scriptures, it's all independent. So, it's not like Rama sent her because he is doubting or he is punishing, nothing like that. From his personal level, he knows nothing. But he cannot function like that. He has to rise above and function like a king. That's all he did. So he did not punish her anything. That is independent. You somehow connected that with this question. But I think they are both independent things. So when anybody is doing any mistake, whether it is small or big, whether it is because of jealousy, arrogance, greed, fear, anger, whatever it may be, it's all because I think I'm separate from you. And that comes because of my ignorance about my true nature. Otherwise, I will not do this. Not possible. I will not covet others' wealth. Why will I covet others' wealth? I will not covet others. Because there is no otherness. From the ultimate. And from the external, each one gets according to what they deserve. So where is the problem? So the moment I understand this knowledge properly, there is no confusion. So all I was wanting to say was that the person who, when he was sent to forest, he wanted to go alone. And when she insisted and she went with him, and she was taken away by Ravana, he pursued her and then he went and fought with him and brought her back. Someone who loves his wife so much and who does it going somewhere else and fighting and getting her back, will he do such a thing? It's not to be seen, you know. Even in general relationships when we see, many people keep quoting that, you know, for example, if a wife is complaining about her husband or husband is complaining about the wife, and in case, sometimes, very rarely I do this counseling, otherwise I don't do it at all, it's time consuming. If both are my class members or something and very lovely couple, some serious issues has come, they want to discuss, then I say, okay. That context you find all the time they're only telling the negative things. But kuch positive to jo hai wo bhi bolo. The moment you start understanding it from the whole perspective, then you know there are certain negativities there in everybody. Nobody is 100% perfect. There are certain negativities which are your perception. They are actually not there. Some are there. Some may be your perception. So when that is clear, then you accept the person for what he or she is. Then where's the problem? So most of the time, the problem is in our head. But the beauty of all these scriptures is, see, that's the beauty of our scriptures. You can discuss, you know, you can question Ram, you can question Krishna, you can question everybody and anybody, and you can disagree also. No problem. You can disagree. You are not forced to agree at all. This is a beautiful culture of learning, where lots of debates go on. All kinds of school of thoughts. Charvakra. Charvakra means absolute atheism. Charvakra philosophy. Advaita philosophy, Dvaita philosophy, Vishishta, Dvaita philosophy, so many schools of thought. The scripture is same. All of them, the gods, goddesses, scriptures, the Puranas, all are same. But they are all different school of thoughts, meaning they look at it from a different angle. When we do it like this, then we go deeper, we develop our intellect, our clarity. So therefore, from that angle when you look at it, nobody should be addressed as Pati. Doing it because they don't know about their true self, sort of ignorance. You think you are this limited individual and you do it out of attachment, out of greed, out of arrogance. So, when people do such a thing and they constantly keep doing like that, they need to be rehabilitated so that they can function in the society without an issue. So you have this punitive self and all that. It's not that you are someone superior, you need to punish them and then nothing like that. But that is how maybe some people understand it. That's not how it is. It is to get them back on track. You know, the society cannot function if each individual starts asserting their ego. And they say, my way or I way, then what to do? How can we function? So therefore, you have this punitive self, this, that, everything. Technically speaking, from the Vedantic angle, nobody is a sinner. Everyone is essentially God. Emerson says, every man means every woman also, every being is God playing fool. God playing fool, meaning God in disguise. God in disguise in one form is Shweta. God in disguise in another form is Anu. Another form is Sadhana, Sandhya, Ami, Lakshmi Narayan. So all are nothing but God in disguise. This is the beautiful culture of our scriptures. There is nothing that is not God. So therefore you can worship anything. You can worship a stone. You can worship a tree. You can worship snake also. You can worship anything. Anything can be worshipped. Because everything is technically divine. So you cover everything with divinity. When you cover anything and everything with divinity, you will not be able to have lust or greed. That's the beauty. See, the beauty of our rituals also. You cover up everything with the divinity, the thought of divinity. You may be preparing the sweets, you may be wearing the new clothes. Everything is covered with the divinity. And somebody gets their first paycheck. The paycheck is kept at the feet of the Lord and then taken and given it to the parents. You prostrate to them and you give it to them. So this whole culture, it's a beautiful thing. It's saying, covering everything with Bhagwan, covering everything with the higher. So the thought cannot be just money making. You may be making money, by the way, but your thoughts are not on the money. It cannot be. You covered up with divinity. So that's why he says, discover the true nature of your inherent being. Your real being is divine. See, when I understand from the depth that I am actually divinity, in spite of my qualifications or the bank balance or my appearance or achievements, I would still walk confidently. But not arrogantly, because I understand that others who are walking along with me, they are also divine. So there will be mutual self-respect for each other. Imagine such a society where everybody is empowered with such a knowledge. So that's all he says. The abode of absolute peace and bliss. Once this knowledge goes in, Thereafter, there can be no agitations. Because of the ego, your life is in pieces. When you gain the knowledge and remove the ignorance, which is the root of this ego, there won't be any agitation in your life. You will be peaceful. And when you are peaceful, you can think properly. And you will achieve things also in life. Materially also, you become the Lord. You will be in deep bliss. That's all he says. Continue, please. Next paragraph.
Humanity is unaware of the intrinsic wealth within oneself. People seek wealth and enjoyment in the external world. They are governed universally by two motivations, to acquire wealth and to enjoy what is acquired. Thus is the life of human beings propelled by these two forces. Few realize that there can be no satiation or fulfillment through acquisition or enjoyment, through external pursuits.
So, not knowing that you are a multimillionaire already, you are running after this external wealth. Your real nature is infinite. That's your intrinsic wealth. Not knowing, you are applying for a loan in the bank. You know, there is this book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. You read the book, in the very beginning, he gives the example of a guy sitting on a huge box. You know, huge box is there. On top of that, a guy is sitting and he's begging. And people who are going on this side and that side of the road, some of them are, you know, saying few bad things to him. Some of them are being kind and giving him some money. One fellow says, without putting any money in his begging, he says, "Why are you begging me? Why don't you open this box and see what is inside? If you see that there is treasure inside, you will not beg. And you need not beg. You are begging today because you never opened the box and saw inside. Similarly, all of us are beggars. There are different types of beggars, that's all. One is a rich beggar, one is a poor beggar. But all are begging. So for something or the other, all of us are beggars. So Vedanta says, you're begging because you never look within. Don't have time. Busy, busy, busy. Everybody is running. Oh, busy. Baba, please, thodasa, wait and think. Dekho, within. Please look within. Arey, yaar, no time. Running. Because by the time I stop and try to find out something within, my neighbor has come and he's got 2-3 more houses, 2-3 more cars, and he's achieved so many awards. So I have to run here. I don't want to listen to you. Why are they running? They are running to find something. Have they found out? Not really. A fellow who is sitting as the regional head in a particular organization, you go and ask him, "Sir, you are the head of this region. Are you really satisfied and happy?" He'll say, No. "I am only head for India. But I want to become the head of whole of Asia." Then he'll say, "Whole of world." It'll never end. So therefore, he says, there is no end. But yet people are only governed by two things. What? Acquisition, enjoyment. They want to constantly keep on acquiring. And why do you acquire? Transact what you acquired for some object or being of the world and experience joy. So basically you are looking for joy, happiness, and you think you will get it by getting the worldly objects. You look at people who have done that in the past. Were they happy? They were not. Therefore he says, few realize that there can be no satiation or fulfillment through acquisition. When you run after the acquisition, temporarily you may be satisfied, but actually it will ask you to crave for more. Mind cannot be satiated without the intellect's guidance. Without establishing yourself in the higher knowledge, it's not possible otherwise. Therefore, he says there is no joy or happiness through external pursuit. There can be no satiation or fulfillment through acquisition and enjoyment. When you don't know, you continue. So instead of wasting your time in trying to acquire the external wealth, put in the effort to know about the inner wealth. The more and more you understand about yourself, then you will be able to apply yourself in a much, much better way in this world and achieve far better things. Yeah, continue please.
Life is defined in Sanskrit as Anubhav Dhara, stream of experiences. As long as experiences flow, there is life. When the flow ceases, life is extinct. An experience is therefore a unit of life, constituted on two factors, subject and object. The individual, you, is the subject. The world, the object. When you contact the world, subject meets object, you gain an experience. And the flow of experiences is life.
So all he's saying is, life is defined in Sanskrit as Anubhava Dhara. Dhara means stream, Anubhava means experiences. So stream of experiences flowing is life. From the time you are born till the time you die, it's nothing but experience after experience after experience. And what is an experience constituted of? You and the world. So when you, the subject, contacts the world, the object, then there is experience and series of such experience flowing is life. So it says, when you contact the world, subject meets the object, you gain an experience, the flow of experience is like. From that, he is going to explain that there are two types of researchers. One who researched on the world and one who researched on the individual. One who researched on the individual are called Vedantins. One who researched on the world are called as politician, economist, etc. You know, historians and all that. He's going to talk about that now in the next paragraph. Please read.
One class of thinkers worked upon this object, world, to provide humanity with greater peace and happiness. They were the scientists. Science has made a colossal contribution for human welfare. It has developed the world to near perfection with press-button comforts. Nevertheless, people are not as happy as they should be. In a perfected world, there seems to be only worry and anxiety, suffering and sorrow everywhere. That is a paradox. Another class of thinkers investigated the cause of the paradox. They were the ancient sages living in the Himalayan ranges. These great philosophers analyzed the anatomy of an experience and discovered that the subject, the individual, was unattended, neglected to a point of fault, while the world was well taken care of by science. Consequently, the unprepared individual lived in stress and strain in the world of plenty and prosperity. The sages thus focused their attention on the subject, the individual, and gave out the sublime philosophy of Vedanta, the knowledge designed to rehabilitate the individual to perfection.
So, one set of people focused upon the world. They were called scientists, economists, politicians. Another set of people focused on the individual. Because in spite of developing the world, we still find that people are not peaceful. So much of mental stress, more and more asylums and punitive cells, psychologists, psychiatrists are needed. Therefore, he says there is this paradox. Inside, the world is developed, but other side, so much of stress and strain. So therefore, they sat and two people sat and said, "Arey, this cannot happen." So they focus on the subject, the individual, not on the world. They are called the Vedanta philosophers or Vedantins. And once you gain that knowledge, it rehabilitates the individual to perfection. Once the inside is corrected, you live in the same world and it stops affecting you. It stops influencing you. You will be able to influence it. Continue, please.
Subjective development prepares the individual to meet the challenges of the objective world. Human beings alone are faced with the dilemma of choosing their action. They need to exercise their choice of action every moment of their life. All other creatures have a computerized, preset program of action. They do not have the problem of choosing their action. A tiger cannot become a vegetarian, nor a cow become a meat eater. They are constrained to follow a course of action to suit their particular nature. Vedanta equips you with the knowledge to make the right choice of action. Also provides you with the technique of action. A technique you can apply in your home, in your business, in society, everywhere. It gives you a practical way of life to satisfy your material and spiritual needs. Following that course, you enjoy prosperity with peace of mind.
So, the line that is a subjective development prepares the individual to meet the challenges of the objective world. Apart from gaining the information about the objective world, which we get in the schools and universities, if we also develop the subject, the individual, which is what Vedanta talks about, we can bring about those kind of development in us. It prepares us to meet whatever challenge it is. So it really doesn't matter what challenge, because world will be constantly changing. World is in a constant flux of change. Now some new challenges come in the form of artificial intelligence. Then we can adapt. We can adapt to another challenge. It will keep coming. But we can adapt as long as the inside is developed. So if your inside is developed, you will know how to choose, because you will be given that knowledge about yourself to be able to choose. As human beings, we have this choice of action which animals don't have. A herbivorous animal will be vegetarian. Carnivorous animals will kill and eat. That is, a human being has a choice to be or not to be. That is the question faced actually. Now the choice is there. So the moment you say choice, you can only choose wisely if you have wisdom or knowledge. So Vedanta gives you that knowledge to make the right choice of action. Every time there is, like you have a choice to come to this class or not to come. Having come, you have a choice to listen or not to listen. Having listened, you have a choice to reflect or not to reflect. Having reflected, you have a choice to test out your convictions or not to test out. Etc., etc., I can go on. So, you must gain this knowledge to be able to make a better choice. And also, it helps you to execute that action, because it teaches you the technique. Technique in the sense, you do the action without getting involved, achieve the success, but don't produce vasanas. All that we discuss in detail later on. So therefore, it gives you the knowledge to make the right choice. It provides you with a technique of applying yourself in that particular activity without getting caught enslaved. How to act like a king. So that's all it is. And this is something that can be applied anywhere. Once you become a Vedantin, you can either be like us doing just full-time classes, or you can go and do business, or you can go and work for somebody. You can do anything. It doesn't matter. Yat karoshi yadashnati, ejjuhoshi dadati yat, yat tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurushva madarpanam se Shri Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita chapter 9. Yat karoshi, whatever you do, it doesn't matter what you do. But whatever you do, you will be applying the technique, you will be applying yourself objectively in the field. So therefore, he says, it gives you a practical way of life to satisfy your material and spiritual needs. Following that course, you enjoy prosperity with peace of mind. So with this, let's conclude today's class. We'll start the next topic in the future. Oh.
Idam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Vayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Budhyatmanava Prakrute Swabhavat Karomi Adyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Eti Samarpayami.